Hey, Musky said the way you move, gonna make you jump, gonna make you groove. When you shake that thing, make a bucktail burn, gonna make you sing. Hey, Manta, when you walk that way, stick a musky sis, can't keep away.
Welcome to the Musky 360 podcast. Hey, Jay Bird.
Hey, Steven.
See me walking.
Black Musky.
Oh, Jay, do you do drugs?
Danny, yes. Every day.
Every day, sir.
Is that how it goes?
Anyway. Oh, my goodness. It is. Mm. We are in the swing. I cannot believe. Like, it's kind of crazy. I can't believe July is just around the corner. I'll say this. All the reports I'm hearing from folks, it doesn't feel like it's almost July on the musky water. You know, it's just kind of craziness. I had some buddies. They were just up hitting some big water in Minnesota. You know, yeah. And it was flooded out. They got a 50. They got some other fish there, but you know, it's not that hot early bite. I think everybody's hoping for. We'll be hearing this week. We're working out some technical difficulties, Jay. Just the tech end of getting that Canadian Musky podcast put together here. But in a matter of days. But you know, talking to Danny Herbeck, it's a slow start up there as well. You know, so just be prepared for that. You're going to get some up-to-date Canadian musky fishing tips and tricks.
Cool.
Probably tomorrow in a day or two or whatever. We'll have it on that. But, you know, about a 20-minute thing where they're just hard-hitting, Jay. Hard-hitting musky news.
Mm-hmm,
hard-hitting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Journalism, they call that.
What?
Huh?
Huh? Anyway. People that just don't get on here and ramble about Caddyshack references. But
so, well, I can do a whole show on that if you want.
Well, folks, welcome to the Caddyshack podcast.
I keep playing.
The heavy stuff's not going
to. Heavy stuff's not going to come down for quite a while.
I felt that way today, though. Like,
yeah, I heard you got stormed on again.
Yeah.
Huh?
Well, the thing was this: got a really nice fish, you know. Put about a 40 in the boat for a first time female angler, and she was elated. And we saw just Donkey Kong earlier, Jay. Just like, this just big girl. And you see the storm coming in. I was like playing. I was out there too long. You know what I'm saying? But you're like, oh, here it comes. This is perfect scenario. And then just the lightning started everywhere. And it's like, run for your lives. You know, play overplayed the hand by one round there. But yeah, it was fun. But it happens. You gotta. I do not recommend when you see lightning, get off the water. But I was about five lightning strikes too late, you know, and then you're doing that boat ride of doom. It's been an interesting week for me, though, Jay. I told you earlier, like 3 days ago, got stung by a hornet.
So, yeah.
If you want to know,
good times.
On the face, folks, on the face.
On the face.
Remember the movie Mask, Jay, where that guy's like uglier than sin? I puffed up so bad. I look like somebody like literally just lined up on me with a T-ball bat, dude. I was like,
so the sunglasses never came off that day is what you're telling me.
Dude, the sunglasses were hurting my face. It was like swollen. Mm. My eyebrow was like, I had Cro-Magnon forehead, you know. I could have been in a documentary about like 2BC and I'm out there just bashing rocks together. I look ridiculous. It was funny. I felt like crap. Took a bunch of Benadryl. Way more than they recommend, and had the craziest dreams ever. Anyway, so that was just funny. Don't get stung by a hornet is the lesson there. Let's look at the comings and the goings. Oh, we should talk about this first before I talk about what's new at the Musky Shop. The Bash. Got a couple emails this week. It is July 20th this year, right?
Saturday. Yep.
Jay, Jay's got kind of a comprehensive list, or at least a quick every talk about, because people are like, who's going to be there, who's not. So Jay will be able to rattle them off here in a second, who's going to be there. But we have a special new edition.
We do?
Of a Elmer's rub down booth. He'll be doing massages right there. That's all you need to know.
Okay.
I think they're $5 a pop, Jay, is what I'm thinking, right?
Okay. So it's like a kissing booth, but different.
But for back rubs, for the ladies.
Okay.
Ladies
okay.
only.
Okay. Just, okay. That sounds like that sounds like my Elmer. All right. Jay,
Elmer's giving the ladies a rub down. You want a back rub from Elmer? $5. No anyway, kidding. Jay, who's going to be there? At least a rough list of everybody you can rattle off the top of your head. I'm prepared.
Chaos Tackle, Smitty's will be there. Boo. Livingston Lures, Suick's gonna have a booth, and everybody's gonna have sales. We're gonna have massive specials.
Booker Shimano, will be there.
Iowa, Joe Booker, mm-hmm. Joe Booker Outdoors, St. Croix Rods, Maps, mm-hmm. Figure Eight with mm-hmm. all the new stuff they got, Lakewood Tackle Boxes, Rad Dog spinner baits,
nice.
Hooked on Musky baits, Akuma, Fish Lab, B&N Tackle, all the way from Ohio. The handmade
crankbaits. Last year. They're awesome baits. Yeah, absolutely.
Stowmaster Nets, Wolverine Tackle, Yellowbird, Violent Strike with all the cool weedless stuff that mm-hmm. Keith makes. Wreck and Wreck, Musky Innovations, Musky Mayhem.
I mean, basically everybody.
Slammer Tackle, Musky Zinc, okay. Stealth Tackle. Yeah, there's a lot.
Basically, that's
going to be great. It's going to be great.
Everybody, yeah.
And plus, you get Stephen Paul and Jay Essie there in the flesh, you know? Yeah.
Boo. And it doesn't cost you anything. You don't have to pay a door fee.
No, it's free. No, free parking. Yeah. Yep. Just enjoy the savings and the specials and all the free stuff we're giving away.
No free back rubs at Elmer's booth.
No.
That's for the ladies only.
No, that's a pay per thing. So, yep.
That's a paid service.
He has a 900 number set up in advance here, so you Absolutely. Can book a time. Yep.
You can get your slot.
It's all planned out.
Elmer's Asian Massage and dentistry.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
He bought the chair. You might as well make the most of it. So anyway, goodness gracious.
That's going to be fun, Steve. It's going to be fun. It's a month away.
Yeah, so much fun.
Woo. Plus, we get to go fishing together. Pound some hogs, hopefully, huh?
On and off the boat. Anyway, so freaking idiot. So let's talk about the new stuff. You've got the Joe Booker Stars and Stripe Depth Raider.
Yep. They sold out. We got more coming this week. So,
they're gone already. Joe.
Oh, they're gone immediately. Yeah. So leave your. Click on, what do you call that, the notification for restock. Mm-hmm. Just put your email in there. You'll get an email the moment they get restocked.
Is the Hot Perch out, too? Does that show up already?
That's another new color. Right. He's got some new colors in the JB Rattlers. And
it says out of stock.
I really like that tin buck color, too. So, yeah, there's a bunch of new colors in the Booker stuff, not to mention all the custom stuff that we, the exclusive custom stuff that we had come in last week from him.
Jay recommended, if Booker's going to do the Stars and Stripes, the American flag on a depth raider, should we do like the classic German flag on a Titan? What do you
think? Right. So that's going kind of in the different direction.
It just doesn't have the same feeling.
No.
Sorry. Anything to be stupid, folks. Oh, yeah, I'm looking here. You got the JB Rattler. You got the Wonder Bread. And you got the... What lake are they just on fire for Wonder Bread? Could it just be white? Do the spots matter? Am I asking the card-hitting questions that nobody asks?
Oh, the spots are beautiful. Hey, did you see those BKK hooks came in we were talking about? Those short shank round bends?
Those are diesel. If you're serious about hooks... What are they made of? There's your Euro hooks. Tim turned me on these forever ago.
Yep.
BKK. That is a wide gap when it comes to a wide gap hook, by the way. They're pretty big in the gap zone.
They're big, so if you're sizing those up, really go about, they're off about two sizes from American hooks. Most like American
hooks. Five
is
like a seven.
Yeah, like a 1/0 BKK would be like a normal 3/0 in a VMC. So keep that in mind, if, or you know, call first and say, "Hey, I'm matching it up for this type of bait." We'll be happy to try to.
They
did that for someone just the other day. So
something
no
I will tell you on these hooks: these are sharper than sharp gets out of the
and
pack.
Stronger than strong gets. They're really good.
Yeah, they're you're paying for them. I mean, I'm just saying, I'm going to call it is what it is, $30 for 25 hooks, but they are wicked sharp. Now, when Tim, I got on Tim's boat in the Netherlands, you know, and I just whip it. I travel with one thing, Jay, a Smitty file at all times, you know, you just, I'll be at dinner.
A hook sharpener or a shanker?
Both. Yeah. Thanks for blowing my cover, but I'll be at dinner at, you know, Texas Roadhouse. I'll break out my Smitty file and sharpen my own knife, right? I go nowhere without it.
So you do that to impress people?
Just women.
Just like, hey, check this out. Check this out. Your knife isn't sharp enough. I'm just going to show you how it's done.
Yeah, it's normal down here, though.
Pretty cool, dude.
Everybody does that. If you don't, you're not cool. Anyway, so I bust out my Smitty file and go to town on one of these hooks. And Tim looks at me like I'm the dumbest person ever. You got to be judicious. That's a thin point. And I'm just warning you, like, don't hog material off of it, right? So if you're going to use the premium hooks, come at them with a light stroke, Jay, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Just
mm-hmm.
a light, just tap it in, tippy tap, tap
tap tap,
tap tap a rooney, but you know it doesn't take a lot to get those razor sharp. They're really good hooks, and if you're serious about hooking, that'd be for you anyway. What do you say, $10? What else is cool? It's cool. Some other stuff's showing up. What new $10 color? Black and orange. Is that the new Booker tail color, Jack? Black and orange.
No. White tail with a black blade.
Nice.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, that works.
Yeah.
I'll say this. Black blades. One thing, a little trickarooski here, because it's coming up around the corner, especially in your neck of the woods, the algae bloom. That August green that happens sometimes, right? You get on these lakes. I'm thinking about a certain lake. There's a couple me and you have fished on. They get that green nastiness to them. Black on black. Another thing I'll tell you is this, pressured fish, blackout blades helps, all right? That's just a whole other conversation, but even powder-coated blades, like they get that freaking Meps Musky Flash Boo, black blades, black skirt, that's kind of money, but like the blackout blades are pretty cool, eliminating the flash, huh?
What do you think it is with black blades? Because they kind of look like nickel blades when they're coming in. But they're dull. You know what? They don't have that metallic finish to it. Do you think that's what it is? It's just sometimes the flashiness isn't the trick, and it's just like you want more of a dull.
I when I've used them and I've seen them excel are on fish that are pressured, like community spots in Canada or, you know, pressured waterways. Where they're seeing a lot of bucktails, but they're kind of inaccessible for anything else. The colored blades seem to do something. I don't mean colored, but the blackout blades, right? Where the vibration's there, but it doesn't have that same flash. So that almost goes, is there like a visual thing that's off-putting to the flash? I don't know. Maybe we're getting the fish too much credit. Maybe it's like confirmation bias or something of that nature. But that's one of the few changes in coloration I've seen that actually kind of matters. You know, it's kind of a different deal there where you go, actually played. And maybe it adds to the silhouette. Who knows? I know in that pea soup and that green algae bloom stuff that happens, fish will respond positively to that black on black, regardless of light penetration, because it seems like that algae kind of like minimizes light penetration. You would think I was professional because I didn't think about the segue, but I just segued, Jay. Dr. Bob crawled out of his lab, right? Out of the Dr. Bob lab. That's his basement. It's where he keeps his action figures. But I got nothing to say. I got to listen. I got my Ninja Turtles here with. I could reach out and touch my collection of Ninja Turtles in the package, Jay. But
okay, it's kind of weird.
It's kind of lame, nonetheless. Dr. Bob put together another magnum opus on the app. It's a light penetration article. It's very well done. It really cuts to the core of the matter of some lot of discussions he and I have had, me and Jay have had on the podcast. So that's worth the read over at the old Apperuski, Jay.
Good deal.
Worth the read there. But anyway, that's good stuff. But yeah, the black on black seems to do something. Collared blades, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, I think minimizing flash sometimes is the ticket, you know. What do you do? Just keep hucking. Just keep chucking. Goodness, let me flip over here, Jay. I've just got it here on the... You talked about journalism over here. Just got it on the Muskie 360 news blotter. Just got word. It's confirmed. Dr. Juice never even graduated high school, Jay. He's not a real doctor. What's your reaction?
No. The whole thing is a farce?
He's not even a real doctor.
Oh,
my. And he's been peddling his juice all over town.
Oh, what a liar.
Could have called it Mr. Juice, Jay.
Doesn't have the same ring, though, Steve.
Mr. Juice just does not. Reverend Juice is weird. Mr. Juice, I know why he went with doctor, but it's time, everybody. People need to know.
You can't say the doctor is in anymore.
No, Mr. Juice is in. Anyway, just sent off the data, the drive, the footage, if you will, for Jay for another kind of master classy thing, a video. So here very shortly, going to have, I think, something that people will dig. Which is a deep dive on spinnerbaits. And you go, oh, my God, spinnerbaits, Jay.
Right. Ooh, throw them out, reel them in. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Apparently, there's more you can do. So I'm kind of stoked about that. I want to, like, when that comes out, if you watch that vid and you dig it, send a message to the app or something. Trying to just do it different of shit I actually do on the boat, opposed to, here is a bubble, you know. Like giving up some ninja tricks or whatever. And I think some different tactics for sure. And today, once the hornet sting subsided, by the way, I didn't look like a mongoloid. I was able to shoot the last half of it. So if you go, wow, it's different days. Yeah, because I got stung by a freaking hornet on the face.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really want to film a video with my eyes swollen up like I'd been hit with a T-ball bat.
No, that would have been cool, though.
But, you know, I asked Jody when I was done filming. I said, what do you think? She's like, oh, my God, that was just rapid fire. It was just like, you know, 17 minutes worth of mods. And I don't think I spent more than 30 seconds on a single one. It was like as many as I could come up with showing you some stuff. So hopefully it catches you guys some more muskies here shortly. But, Jay, it's raining. I can hear the thunder. I can hear the lightning. We better get to some Q&A here before the power goes out and get after it.
Okay.
I'm going to put you on the spot. We need a pre-bash giveaway, though. Right.
Okay.
Pre-bash giveaway. Think about it.
Okay.
Maybe we do it at the end. That's not a plug. We haven't talked about this, but every year we kind of do something. So, oh, crap, dude. All right. Can you guys keep a secret? Just nod yes in your car or at work. Okay, so we've done the get everybody to sign a block of cheese last year, right? And we've done bring Joe Booker deviled eggs. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you right now, I'm going to make sure you get the most awesome grab bag. You've got to make Joe Booker macaroni art and take it to him, right? Get you some dry macaroni, glue it on some construction paper or printer paper. What do you got? Whoever makes the weirdest thing, and you've got to take it to Joe and be like, I made this because I've been thinking about you. That's it. Just hand it to him. Right?
Right.
Like, maybe you just write Joe Booker and macaroni and glue it on there and go, Joe. And the more vacant-eyed you can be, too, is the better. Like, Joe, I've been thinking about you, and I made this. I just want to see his reaction. So whoever makes a piece of Joe Booker macaroni art, just hand it to him. Make sure he's very confused and be as creepy as possible about it. You will leave with awesome shit. I promise you that. So every year, yeah, well,
we got some grab bags, baby. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, dude, last year, like, freaking some of these people we've loaded up. It's like, see me and Jay behind the barn. That's where the real action's happening, you know? It's where back there shooting dice and giving away free shit.
A lot of black market stuff going on back there, Steve.
Freaking listen, kids. Jay opens his trench coat. You want to see a real hog wobbler?
Mm-hmm.
And then you're in the game. He's got pants on at that point. It's actually the bait, the hog wobbler. Something we should say, and I'm just rambling, having a good time. Sad announcement. Jay learned this week about the passing of the maker of Gooch's Tallywhacker.
Randy, yeah.
That, yeah. So sad to hear that. Yeah, well wishes to them. You know, hopefully the Gooch's brand will carry on. We're losing a lot of what I call heritage baits. We just are, whether it be, what was it, Ghost Tales is gone. You know, a lot of the it's Fuzzy does it, or one of them's good. Like, there's so many of these
tackle.
So a lot of different things changing, man. So just to let you guys know, hopefully that brand carries on, but condolences to them, because that's kind of a legendary bait and definitely an important part of the history of muskie fishing was the Gooch's Tallywhacker for sure.
Absolutely.
You know, that's it. They made the Gooch's Banana. I got to tell you this. I've got a hell of a lot of traction out of saying the word Gooch on the podcast, Jay. I hope they continue on, because the word Gooch and the word Tallywhacker gives me a lot of runway.
Mm-hmm.
So
Always has.
Hopefully always will. Condolences to them, guys. Anyway, moving on. Get fired up, Jay. Let me hear it. What, take a swig here?
Woo! Fired up. I'm just incredibly fired up, Steve. I don't know what we got, but it's going to be good.
Dude, you're like, frick. Are we still going to bingo when I come up?
Yeah, I haven't looked into it yet, but oh my gosh. I drove by the community center in St. Germain the other night. Shit. I have a feeling they're on Tuesday nights, because I don't know what was going on there, but it was packed.
It was the polka.
It must have been bingo.
Bill.
It must have been.
Dude, we're playing bingo. Done.
Oh, yeah.
As long as they're not doing sobriety checks, I'm in. Is it legal to play bingo drunk?
Oh, sure.
Better be. Bill, could you guys please explain? Oh, boy. Give me a moment. I don't pre-screen.
Collect yourself.
Bill, could you guys please explain what happens during the musky spawn? Well, Billy, when two muskies love together. Each other, like me and your mom... And they've decided
you're terrible.
Sit down. I'm gonna have a talk, Billy. When two muskies love each other like me and your mother, we go into the shallows and we bite the crap out of each other and we rub on each other until we both just go blah, and it happens. Is that how the talk went for you, John?
Yeah, something like that.
Pretty much. It's always awkward. Anyway. So during the spawn, and he continues on, he says that he feels like he knows he's a little bit behind for some places. And to be honest with you, word I'm getting, it's still happening in some places in Canada, by the way.
But, yeah, I heard that too.
Yeah. So it's a late spawn some places. What muskies do in general is they're going to stage outside of spawning areas. They use these same areas year after year after year, as long as they're not interrupted. Okay. Pretty interesting study was done on a river where they shocked or harassed muskies that were spawning that were tagged. Right? I'm paraphrasing greatly here. Well, guess what the muskies did? They didn't go back to that spot for the next spawn, which is a big part of why we have closed seasons in most places or in some places. So they're not getting pestered, right? They don't want to be harassed or caught during that time. They will stage outside of the spawning area leading up to it. And then the females go in and the males go in, they pair up and they do what muskies do best at that time of year. But as far as the angling experience, you know, you can refer some of the pre-spring episodes or the early season stuff we've done. But generally what muskies will do, they'll stage suspended in slightly deeper water on the outside of the spawning area. When temperatures are right or the photo period is right, they move in, they pair up, right? It's debatable. I've heard a lot of conversation. Do the males go in first or the females go in first? Who knows? I mean, Dr. Bob was actually on my boat one time where we're looking on Panoptix. We saw a just pack of big females, Jay. It was one of the more vulgar things I've ever seen on live scope and down imaging. And we're like, whoa! And they're just there, like, stacked everywhere, right? Just big fish. No interest in any baits, nothing. I mean, literally, I took a Bondi bait, and on Panoptix, I banged it off of one's head, and it was like, didn't even respond. Like, you saw the bait, like, doink, and I felt it, and they're like, just nothing. So those fish are typically geared up caloric wise, and as we know, they're not going to eat during the spawn, so they're going to stage outside those areas. And then when that magic moment happens, some places the males are in first, some places the females are in first. It changes up based on where you're at. They pair up, they do their business, yakety schmackety, right? Females kind of knock out their deal once. I don't know, and it's a good question. I don't know if the males can, what their, Jay, when two people love each other, like the muskies do, I don't know if the males just keep rocking in the free world or if it's like a one and done. I think they probably have a couple rounds in them. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Couple sure. rounds. That's what happens.
Moving on. I don't know. Yeah.
Man, it could get, before it gets real awkward, Jay.
Sure.
Hank, looking to gear up for my annual Wisconsin trip. What baits seem to be getting the most attention currently? I know Jay knows because whatever they're buying at the shop. This is a good question. Whatever they're buying at the shop is what they're hitting. Dang, Hank, right there, Jay. What do you see going over the counter right now?
The last week. Last week's been up and down, but it was a cool week here again. A lot of days were really cool. The water's not warming up much. I was out today. Same deal. You'll have like 2 days where most of the reports are bucktails.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll have 2 days most of the reports are actually soft plastics. You're getting a little bit of topwater action. Not much, though, for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the water's warm enough to promote that enough. That's been, I had some action, trolling crankbaits and casting crankbaits, small stuff, 6-inch stuff, slammers.
When you're saying no bucktails, is it like Bukertail 500s? Is it like little stuff? What are you seeing, guys?
It's like, not big stuff. It's predominantly small stuff like musky killers, musky flashaboos. Mm-hmm. Little RJs, Bukertail, 700 stuff, 500 stuff, small stuff still plays big time.
Yeah. But
that's what I did today. Downsized. I got one dink, but it was, it was small bucktail.
Really? Very nice.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
How'd you prepare him?
Oh, delicious fish. Delicious.
What a delicious fish. I'm sorry. Jay, I talked to you earlier this week about, I've heard from people, why do these guys not take it seriously? And then like me and you realize, you and I, like we're always just clowning around. I'm sitting here going, Jay has what, 25 years plus? I'm at like year 23. It's like after that long, you just go, let's have fun. Don't eat muskies, but I'm sorry. Some people just there. Some people are in their mom's basement, you know, selling freaking beaver baits and whatever. Moving on.
Sure. Yeah. So some people
serious. Do. You know what? That's it, Jay. We're going to get real serious. You ready to get super serious about musky fishing?
Oh, 100%.
Let's burn down.
It sounds like sarcasm, but it's not. I'm very serious today. I'm very serious today.
Grinding. Whatever.
Okay.
Bradley, I fish in Clear Lake, and I've always struggled with spooky muskies. What tips do you have to convert more fish in the figure eight in gin clear water before they break off? Okay. First and foremost, you can play mornings and evenings in clear water to minimize that. That's like the super basic answer for you, right? Like,
yep. Well, check the box. Yep.
You know, if you move him in the noontime, go get him in the evening. All right. Well, sometimes they're just not there. Okay. Grandpa, put away the old tips. No one cares. So how do we actually convert more fish in that scenario? If we're patterning clear water fish, I have always been of the mindset of some dramatic thing, what I call a mid-cast trigger, right? What can we do that is a dramatic change up in the middle of the cast, whether we know a fish is there or not, do something different before we get to, and it goes to Dr. Bob's article, the level of light penetration, where fish can see, the angle that they subtend, when the light hits their eyes, blah, 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 all these reasons that things go bad boat size. Clear water is tough. And if he's saying gin clear, I mean, there's clear water. There's, you know, blah, blah, blah water. There's places where it looks like a, you know, you're fishing in a bottle of Fiji, you know, it's just clear. Focus on mid-cast triggers. I'm big on clear water scenarios where, let's say I'm fishing a meat grinder. And I don't say a bucktail, but I'm going to a knee-jerk reaction with like the Steve's meat grinder, where there's dead stick options. So clear water baits for me are dead stick baits or baits that do something on the rise or on the fall. Okay? So you can kind of get your 30 feet off the boat and you're going, and I should preface this whole thing. Clear water fish take long casts. It really does, especially if we're in calm conditions. I'm not a bomb caster, but in this scenario, if it's clear, you're not dealing with a bunch of chop, just a moderate chop or no chop, you're going to have to make some bomb casts, right? So what you need to think about is spacing yourself out boat control wise, where you're getting plenty of saturation on an area. And then where is kind of like the first break, or where does the cover or the structure change? And then do I have some runway between myself and that? So, you know, thinking of, say, like a Minnesota weed bed, Jay, you could have the boat sitting in 30 feet, but you're throwing up to 2 feet and, you know, 3/4 of your cast is over the weed bed and we have this drop off. Dead stick options. So spinner baits, right? Big rubber presentations, jerk baits like the Kraken or your Red October. And swim baits, and what can we do where we go, okay, I'm confident that I'm hitting the right areas. I'm hitting the right target zones where I've been moving muskies. When I'm 30 feet out from the boat, what am I going to do to trigger a strike? You've got to go. I have his attention. You've got to assume each cast is a follow, right? And after a while, with clear water muskies that keep coming in, breaking off, keep coming in, breaking off, you're beating your head against the proverbial wall. Well, they break off before the figure eight. Oh, boy. Better keep doing it. What are we going to do before they break off that's going to elicit a strike?
Yeah.
Two options. The bait falls or it rises. That's it. That's all we have the physical ability to do right now, right? The bait can't go 100 yards to the left or 100 yards to the right. It can rise or it can fall. So spinner baits in clear water are far more important to me than bucktails, because a spinner bait has a triggering mechanism on the fall. Big rubber, rubber jerk baits, like I said, you're cracking. And then dive and rise baits, your Suix, your Titans, your, in lieu of, you know, out of respect, the Gooch's banana. Dive and rise baits become an option in tough conditions with clear water muskies, because you can at least let that thing float up to the surface, give it a couple twitches before you jerk it back down with a Titan. Or with a spinnerbait, take your Book or Tail, your Grim Reaper, your Rad Dog, whatever. You're moving in. Like I was talking, when you see this video, I'm talking about rip moves and pickpocketing with spinnerbaits. You can do that 30 feet off the boat, like straight retrieving it. And then we do this like lift fall routine. Mid cast triggers are super important in clear water scenarios. Your Bulldogs, rip, pull. You're getting close to the boat, just let that sucker fall, right? He'll nose down on it and follow it down, then rip it up. Come up with things that elicit a response. Now, it's gonna be different in each body of water you fish, but I'm always going to focus on baits that have action while not being reeled, pulled, or jerked in that scenario. Mm-hmm. That's the best way to look at it. So if that bait needs momentum, right, to have an action, it's kind of off the radar for me. You know, like, you could, in theory, do well with, say, like, a Hellhound or a Phantom, but, like, yeah, it falls and it rocks a little bit, but is it going to be dramatic enough to drive that fish's head down and then rip up? You know, I want sink rate, and I want action on the fall, or action on the rip up, or action on a pull up before I get those fish coming in. The only other commentary I would say is this. After that mid-cast trigger, I'm getting down and I'm driving that bait down with a low rod angle in hopes that they don't break off when they come in the figure eight. That I can keep them below the level of light penetration. I can keep them from spooking out. What do you think, Jay?
Yeah, well, you were talking about being in 30 feet of water on a Minnesota clear lake and casting up to a, you know, to a weed line that you can't see, but you're looking at it on your electronics. And that's just like, that's a mindset thing. I think most people have, that don't have a lot of experience, might really struggle with that. I classic line from Doug Smith at Work, the Big Ticket, that always cracked me up is when you talk about clients that get nervous
when they can't,
if they
see,
can't see the weeds.
Yeah.
So, you know, and he's,
you know how you
he's
get
in the
that?
Proper spot. So, you know, it's just like, okay, they're right there. This is what we need to be doing. We can't be on the weed bed casting to it because we want to effectively work that drop off. So, yeah. You get past that or have that mindset that you're in the right spot and you're functionally going to have a really good percentage shot at a super hog
or any
by hog. Doing that.
So
that's right.
Listen, it's like Jay's plan. You got to stay till close if you want a super hog. That's like fishing dark, you know, last call for muskies, last call for super hogs, the JSE story. Long story short, if you've never backed off an edge a tremendous distance, you're not confident in that, because I get it. Like, I deal with clients every single day and I'm going, we're throwing at a creek channel that's in the middle of a bay. What? I thought we'd be fishing weeds. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we're not.
Or shoreline.
Shoreline. Mm-hmm. Right. And I do. I'll say this. I would say 75% of my time on the water is nowhere near shoreline, by the way. That's a whole other animal, but it just bores me.
And the other 50% of the time is spent trying to convince the clients that you're in a great spot and a great position.
My 100% of the time's going, I don't care what they think. I don't care. Shut up and cast, fool. No, I'm a very light touch on the boat. I try to explain what we're doing thoroughly. But if you've never been comfortable with not having that visual target, say you got a bomb cast, go in on your trolling motor. Most of us, if you don't have one, that's fine. And I'll give you two options. If you don't have a graph in the front, you can use casting buoys, right? Hell, you can use a milk jug on a string. Go in and drop waypoints on the weed edge that you're throwing at. So you know your boat control is good enough to stay on the outside edge. Right? Would you rather catch a fish and spend 5 minutes marking a weed edge on your trolling motor? Go, I'm right on the weed edge with my trolling motor. Waypoint one. Go down 20 feet. Waypoint two. Go down again. Waypoint three, right? And do that. Or would you rather be out for an hour fishing the edge with shitty boat control? And there's this weird breakup with musky game. We got to be casting. Go in and mark the edge with waypoints on your front graph. Then back off so you're very confident. The other commentary. I still like my freaking whatever brand they are. I probably bought them seven. Hell, I probably didn't buy them. My dad probably bought them 1972 of these buoys. I use them way more than you'd ever think. So fishing reefs in Canada, here's a buoy on one end and a buoy on the other end. I don't need to be watching my graph and not casting a buoy to the left, buoy to the right. That's my line. Those tools are very useful. And most people just don't want to do it because they think that if they get one more cast in, if they drop buoys, it's going to cost them five casts. Well, if you drop the buoys or you drop the waypoints, you're going to catch more fish because you have really good boat control. Good boat control is the first part of musky fishing. And in clear water, guess what, man? You better have good boat control. You can't be up grinding the freaking trolling motor prop off on a reef on a dead flat calm Canada today. Well, we're a pitch castaway. No, sir. So marking those locations via whether it be your graph or via literal float buoys where you drop them down and you mark your edge and you come through and you make your pass, you're going to feel way more confident you're hitting your target zone, right? I'm comfortable now with the waypoints, but for Canada, I'm fishing with buddies up there and doing that thing, man. Drop a couple freaking buoys. You see them? Yeah, I see them. Throw between them. So sure. That's how we get confident doing that, because now we have a target. Once you have that target, you can back really far off of it and go, well, that buoy's right there on the weeds. I'm good. So we're no longer contemplating, is my boat control sucking? We know our boat control's good. Now we can focus on what matters, mid-cast triggers. What's our mid-cast trigger now? Instead of going, my boat control sucks. Blah, we're in, we're out, we're this, that. Anyway, I'm on a soapbox. Frickin' Jay. Jay marks his spots with old gin bottles and twine. Fills them full of lightning bugs and twine. Anyway, what do you think, Jay? You ever use buoys?
Yeah, I used to.
Now, Jay, you just know your water. And that's the other thing. When you know a spot or an area, you know, it becomes less about that. But if you want to break into that, man, freaking what do buoys cost at the shop, Jay? $4? I mean, come on. Give me a break.
Mm-hmm.
Totally a valuable thing to have, like I said, or marking your weed bed. Get there. Focus on mid-cast triggers. Baits that float up or baits that fall. You're going to catch more musky. Samantha B. Female musky angler in the house, y'all. Yee. So, looking for rubber lures that are a little less painful to throw all day. My husband will throw big baits like the Medusa and the Bulldog, you know, mag size, I'm assuming. But I have trouble doing that with my size and the amount of force that it takes. What are some lighter options? Love the podcast. Jay, smaller options for Bulldogs. What are you thinking? Bulldogs, Medusas. Obviously, you got the downsides. What's some lighter stuff?
Yeah, mini Medusa.
Well, that's real small.
I don't know. They're like, what, 3.5 ounces or something? That's half the weight of a regular size Medusa, if that's what your husband's throwing. So cut the size in half, it's going to cast no problem. You don't even need extra heavy gear for it. So there's always light options in the manufacturers that have large, you know, rubber lineups like Musky Innovations and Chaos Tackle, mm-hmm. even Toothy Tough. You know, they've got a smaller model. They don't really have size names. They have length names. It's a 4-inch, but that's mm-hmm. just the body. It's actually a decent size soft plastic. Another thing would really to be looking at would be like regular size swimming dogs mm-hmm. or the 8-inch Poseidon from yeah. Chaos Tackle. Those are fairly light baits, and swim baits like that have been really good this year.
Dynamite. Really good. Yeah. I mean, or your standard size, which is so overlooked now, just the standard size bulldog. Whatever that is. Is that just a bulldog? You got Mag Dog, all the
original. Yeah, standard size is a size smaller than the Magnum.
Yeah, the original size bulldog. The Savage Gear Alienial's not that bad of a throw. You know, I mean, I get it. And I mean, you know, some of the young guys are going, oh, I could throw bulldogs. Son, I've thrown bulldogs for years, and my back hates me now. Like, my pounders on my boat, Jay, are for show. At this point, it's like, you guys want to see the biggest bait you ever seen? And you whip out a pounder. I'm like, hell no, I'm not throwing it. I'm just, if they're only on pounders, I'm out, dude.
You got to think efficiency. I mean, yeah, I mean, 6-7 ounce baits and up compared to a little 3.5, that's all day. All day with no discomfort.
You know, I'm telling you. I mean, you crack 40, boys, it's downhill. So my pounder days are long gone. I'll pull them out now and again, but I mean, I've spent years ripping rubber, and it's just brutal. And the older I get, the more brutal it gets, and the more forgiving. I just thought of something. Beaver baits, Jay.
Yeah.
Looking at the wall here, and I was saying one thing, but I'm looking at one. That's a great jerk bait option that you can get away with it's somewhat lighter variation, by the way.
Yeah, get a mini beaver bait. Put like a half ounce lead insert in that, screw in that thing.
And
yeah, that's it. Yeah, it's got the appearance of a soft plastic.
Yeah. And with that, I'm sorry to shift gears that hard. What you can get away with, Samantha, is real stop with that bait, too. You don't have to rip that bait. And I was just literally, I was about to talk about, Jay's, like my lower, like the torque on my lower back. There was years back, man, freaking, I'd been throwing rubber baits literally all winter long. And February comes, I'm talking December, January, I'm into February. I've thrown rubber baits from the time the sun came up. I ate a sandwich. And I was on the boat. I think I saw this before. I just heard a snap in my back. And I was like, I mean, just geeked out. I mean, I hurt myself badly where I couldn't stand. If I was standing up, it hurt. If I sat down, I hurt. I was just kind of laying on my side in the fetal position on the couch for 3 days. Like, So, yeah, I mean, pounders and mega medusas and these monster baits, I mean, they catch up with you. That beaver bait, I think, was probably, if it's a big profile situation, would probably be your best option. Or if, like, the ripping of the baits is bad, a high-speed reel, burst, reel, stop, reel, stop, reel, stop. You know, being telling that story about maiming myself fishing big rubber, part of the reason, like, with the crack and made it where it takes far less force, right? You can reel stop a crack, and you could reel stop a beaver and get a good action out of it. That would be my ticket there. The young guys that listen, Jay, they're laughing at us now.
No, they're not.
You old farts. Screw you, kids. Get off my lawn.
Mm-hmm. Stay off the grass.
Stay off the grass, stoner. Anthony, hey, guys. I got one of the smaller headhunters a while ago, but haven't got to throw it in too much. While back, this was a lure that was talked about, but not so much recently. Do you still use it? Also, any tips or tricks for it? How do you work it? Situations you like it for? Anything that would be helpful? Thanks,
AJ.
Yeah, the headhunter. It is like a hard swim bait. Still throw it. We were gabbing about it a bunch, I guess, but, you know, and just cyclical. What I like about that bait, it's got a really fat swim to it with a headhunter, just like Poseidon's, just like your swimming dogs. Throw it out, turn the handle, stop. It's all about the pulse with that bait, right? The big headhunter, the big headhunter is a big bait. I think the 8-inch is kind of like the money size on that. For me, negative neutral fish, it always did really well, especially up north. Low rod angle, turn the handle, pause, turn the handle, pause, and it kind of kicks to the side. I mean, that thing is a great bait. I would say it kind of like in my rotation came out of my bait rotation with the advent of that shallow swimming dog. Right, because like the headhunter doesn't sink nor fall, it kind of hangs, and it really, I think with the shallow swimming dog, I was like surging and stopping a little bit more. So I would say it's somewhat interchangeable in that swim bait kind of deal. I know it's not a rubber swim bait, but it has kind of that undulating kind of twisty thing. So throw it out, turn the handle, give it pauses. You can rip that bait a little bit. It'll kind of kick to the side a little bit. You can jerk bait it. So definitely solid, something worth having in the tackle box. Rich cuts right to it, Jay. I'm looking here. I can see the whole question. Do you think Panoptics should be banned? Question mark. Wow. Banned for what?
Why?
I hate this shit.
Tournaments?
I'm just calling. Listen, forget the podcast. This is Steven about. I hate this shit.
Technology?
No.
Questions?
No.
Too much technology is what I'm getting at?
No, I love technology.
No, I'm saying that's what he's saying. It's just like, is there too much technology involved with this? I'm going to cut to it.
Dr. Bob. I'm narking on him. Last time I fished with him, he said, remember what you're saying about Panoptics like 2 years ago? That's what a bunch of guys are saying now. It's not so great to drive around and find fish, but it's really good for patterning. Dead nuts. And I said, yeah, dude. That's what I've said forever. I have no interest nor the time to drive around and snipe fish. I just don't. I mean, in my world, like my clients today, freaking, they're a heck of a lot of fun. It was a father and a daughter from Texas, right? The daughter woke up one day and said, I want to catch a muskie. That was the scenario. Well, the monkey's been on my back for a couple of days to catch her a muskie. I have Panoptics on the boat. I got side scan. I got a down scan. I got freaking body scan. I got freaking A. I got it all. At no point in time did I go, the path of least resistance is telling these people to stand still and not cast wide, drive around and use Panoptics until we get in front of a fish. Not happening. Like in my world, we're fishing. We are casting and we're retrieving baits, right? Nobody wants to stand there holding a bait and going, tell me when to cast. I'm not going to fish that way. It's bullshit. Right? Fishing is not catching. It's not, we don't call it, let's go catch some fish. We go, let's go fishing. There's a process. The suck is what makes musky fishing awesome. If you guys haven't realized that, the suckitude of this sport is why it's endearing. If you don't enjoy being out in nature, you don't enjoy the camaraderie, you don't enjoy the grind, this is not the fish for you. I can't, as a guide, take people out and go, hold the rod, get ready to cast. We're going to drive around for 45 minutes. I'm going to say, throw over there. That's lame. It's boring.
Yeah. Yeah.
Could I do it? Yeah. Is it stupid? Yeah. So it's all about application. My grandfather thought freaking flashers were cheating, Jay.
Right.
They sure you shouldn't have that shit on your boat. So It's about application. For me, panoptics is banal. It's pointing down the side of my boat on a turret. I have it on a mobile turret, and I bet you I move it once a week because it just stays there. I'm looking down the side of the boat. I catch more fish because I see them coming in the figure eight more so than anything. I use it to dial in my trolling baits more so than anything. To ban it, no. Because, I mean, if you want to drive around and you want to snipe fish, good luck, man. That's not fishing. It's boring. You might catch. You might, you know, make 10 casts and catch 2 fish. It's possible. Most of the fish I've seen that you just kind of roll up on, they're just there, are kind of just there. Right? I don't have a lot of luck with suspended fish. They're just like hanging out. You know? Oh, I drove down an edge and there's one there and I threw a bait. He didn't even move. He's just kind of he's just there. So from my purview, no. I mean, you can use, and here's the thing. The people that ask about banning, and he's Rich, in Rich's defense, he's not saying, I think you should ban it. What do you think? So I'm telling you flat out.
You just ask
me. Right. For me, you know, been here, done this. You know, we got about 50 years in the muskie business between the two of us here. I've heard it all from, you know, shouldn't be able to do this, shouldn't be able to do that. Don't do this, don't do that. It's about application. I'm not going to sit around and waste my time because nobody wants to ride around in a guide boat that's like, we make 12 casts in a day and the guy's just like glued to the screen driving the boat. That's not going to happen in my world. You know, I think the negative side of that technology is probably more so for schooling fish. You know, if I was a walleye guide, my goodness, you know, I would be staring at that thing all day long because you go, okay, there's a bunch of them. There's a bunch of them. There's a bunch of them, right?
Yeah.
So it narrows the search where you can spend more time fishing where the fish are. Should it be banned? No. Should it be banned in tournaments? No. I've said this before. I mean, I know dudes personally that fish the Bassmaster Classic, right? That's about as big as it gets. They can use whatever. If you use the word professional, I think that it's an even field, whether you use it or not. But panoptics is not this hot button issue to me that it is to everybody else. I'm just going, shut up. You know, it seems like the people that don't have it whine about it. Seems like the people that have it are like, bah! Like, it is it a game changer for what I use it for seeing deep figure eights? Yeah. Can you catch muskies without it? Yeah. Can you catch more muskies with it? Yeah. You know, is everybody and their brother that has it driving around and scoping fish and just like raping and pillaging? No.
Yeah, I think probably a good percentage of the people that buy it and get it all installed correctly and
don't even know how to use on it.
Don't know how to use it, and a lot, and the people that do know how to use it are like, yeah, it's cool, but I don't want to spend my time staring at that darn thing.
It's not the end all be all.
You know, and they end up using it kind of like how you are, and it's just like, boy, it's great for seeing fish come in that are low, deep, slow, whatever.
Absolutely.
Just fish following on a figure eight or on a, you know, on the end of the cast. So that's an important factor, and that's really cool.
Have I caught fish that I never would have caught before without panoptics? Yep. Absolutely. Yep. Guilty as charged. Deep fish coming in that I didn't know were there, and I do like freaking figure eights where my reel's in the water and caught them. Yeah. Does that happen once a week? No. Once a month? No. Right? Is it a heck of an indicator for bait fish movement and their action? Not to toot their own horn, but to toot in the book Next Level Musky Fishing. I cover live imaging and sort of most of the ways that I use it and some different ways you can use it. I think the most impactful thing for me is seeing the forage movement. Is the forage really active or is it stationary? And that dictates my presentation choice. right? Way more than my downscan data, because downscan's in the past, but live imaging, if things are really moving around, I can fish fast. If things are really sluggish, I can fish slow. Outside of that, I'm not staring at that thing all day long going, is there a muskie 93 feet out? Throw over there. You know, not my game. Maybe some people are. Should it be banned? No. Will it be banned? No. I think the people that like want it to be banned are just going to wave that flag forever, and that's their right. I'm not here to judge. I think it's having a far more negative effect on schooling fish. I'll tell you that right now. Right? I one thing I can tell you about Panoptics I've noticed. Do you know what a spider rig is, Jay?
I don't think so.
For crappie fishing. So spider rigging, especially in the South, is kind of this thing that happened where you would see a boat, and in the front of the boat, they would have like 10 rods out, right? No line limits, and they call them spider rigs. They have like spider legs, if you will, every direction, and they drift the boat through there, you know, and they're surging the boat, and they get dialed down the crappies. Well, now guess what you see? You see one rod, one man in Panoptics. They don't need to have all these rods out to get dialed in. They just need one rod in that screen and a school crappie. Right? Mm. So you can wear out schooling fish. What a crappie love doing? Getting on trees, getting on, you know, stuff like that, getting on the weed edge. Buddy, you get on school with something, you just tear their ass up one after another after another. I think that's the more detrimental impact of live imaging. I can't imagine like a walleye guy like jigging off the bottom without something like that where you go, we're in them, boys. Whack, 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 whack. You know, from the musking application. Here's the thing to look at. If you want to drive around all day long with your remote control in your hand and your rod in the other and stare at five or six screens and you whack a fish because of it, that's not an experience I want to have. I have no judgment of you, but that's not fishing to me. That is like, you know what I'm saying? Like you might as well be just like playing Nintendo and driving around. There's one and we throw it and we don't get him. I want to cast. I want to enjoy that experience. And the less screen time I have on the boat, the better. Admittedly so. I'm looking at my Panoptics over my shoulder all the time for figure eight fish, but I'm not going to sit here and drive around that edge and go, there's a suspended fish 65 feet out, 8 feet down. Not the experience I want to have. Anyway, what's your thoughts, Jay? Do you think they should just ban musky fishing altogether?
No. I mean, yeah, there's groups all over the place, you know. I mean, isn't there a group in Minnesota that just wants to, they just want to ban muskies in general because they're eating all the walleyes or they're eating all the pike or they're eating all the panfish and they're killing the ecosystem.
I don't know,
I don't know, save your breath.
If people didn't have something to bitch about, would they, like, the people that are mad about this stuff are the kind of people that live in a homeowners association and come over and measure your grass. Leave me alone, you know. Don't tread on me. I'm tell you that right now.
America.
Yes, sir. I just had me a swig of that jungle juice, Jay. I'm ready to rock. Dylan, okay. Sorry. I wasn't trying to get off of... Again, let me circle back, as they say now. Circling back. I'm not passing judgment. You're entitled to your opinion. That's my opinion. That's what I think. I don't give a shit what you do. If you want to go and freaking throw hand grenades at these things on your lake, more power to you. You know what I'm saying? As long as you're not doing it on my lake, I don't give a rat's ass. You know? Go freaking fish with hand grenades. Dylan! Hey guys, avid listener to the pod and had a question regarding weather conditions so far this year. I fished northern Minnesota, primarily Lake Vermilion. Since the season opened, we haven't had a solid stretch of stable weather. Excuse me, from opener till now, rain storms, it feels like every other day, and the air temperature fluctuates quite a bit. Sounds like kind of like what you're dealing with, Jay. Lows in the 40s at night and can be anywhere from 60s to high 70s on any given day. One day it'll be blowing 20, winds out of one direction, the next day calm, and then it switches back. Just wondering how these unstable weather conditions affect the fish and how a weekend where it can dial in and pattern fish effectively from Thursday night until Sunday afternoon. Now, my first question is, are you fishing the entire time? If you don't fish from Thursday till Sunday afternoon straight, Jay, no breaks, right, Jay? No sleep, yeah. No food, no water, 100%. So, I'm teasing. Okay, weekend warrior. I want to see that. Can you do like an 80-hour muskie marathon, Jay? Just you, one camera, and you're just kind of falling apart like vlog style, like hour 17.
Oh, God, that would be gripping.
It would be. It'd just be sad.
Mm-hmm.
It'd just be you out there growing a little stubble.
Live on the gram.
Just you stream the whole thing, and it's just you.
Just stream it.
Just crying most of the time.
Just dodging pontoons.
Just freaking here. There I was in Contoon.
Stay off my weed bed.
Stay off my weeds, kids.
All my fury on the water.
Fury on the water, the JSE story. One man's battle against sad. So here's the deal. Muskies and staging is an equation of stability. It simply is, right? So when you have mixed up conditions, guess what we have, Jay? Mixed up muskies. You will have shallow fish. You will have deep fish. You'll have suspended fish. You'll have everything.
They're spread out.
Spread out. Stability, it's not even a generality, just a truism. Stability will bring congregation to a body of water, right?
Stable. Yeah, I think you're onto something here. Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, whether... The old adage, oh, well, the wind shifted this, and the bait's over here, and the things are there. It's kind of like a free-for-all, right? Muskies have gone, I need to eat, and this is what is in my proximity, and it is good. So you might have fish on the bottom, again, suspended, some buried in the weeds. So what it is through the statistical probability, you have a real hodgepodge of crap. The game you got to play is, what is the highest percentage game I'm comfortable with, right? When things are highly unstable, what I am looking for is small areas that are holding bait fish that are possibly out of the wind, but like if dude's saying it's shifting, it's this way, it's east, it's west, it's the all over the place, right? That might not even be on the table. If it is just tremendously a mess, what I will look at is an early morning shallow bite and an evening shallow bite. We all know that. That's bare bone basics, right? Once the sun peaks above the horizon, right? Or until it's just getting to the dim part of the day, in severe mix-ups, if I have to catch a fish, I'm going to troll and I'm going to jig. You always have muskies on the bottom. I can promise you that in every body of water there is, from the south to frickin' Loch Sewell, there's always a muskie on the bottom. So if it is just like, and I've done it, man, where I walk out, and I've got eager clients, Jay, and we're looking at each other. Oh, today looks great. And I'm going, but you don't know what happened yesterday and what happened today, and now it's shit, you know? What am I going to do? I can always get a bite jigging. Always. If you are jigging an outside edge, or you're jigging the first break, and if you put in from early morning until sunset, I think it's the highest percentage thing you can do is vertical jig. There will be a fish somewhere that will respond positively to a vertical jig, right? Not every day, but it's I would say it's the highest yield per hour, right, of anything you could do when we're talking mixed up, horrible, awful conditions. Jay, it is not the funnest thing you can do either, right? So if you have to catch a fish, you're super dialed in, you just want to net one, when things are a washing machine and you just can't make hide nor hair of a pattern, getting on the first major break in jigging is going to be the option. So my game plan for super washing machine, super weird weather changes, focus shallow early, focus shallow in the evening. The rest of the day needs to be jigging. If you can run a couple lines, troll, right? But a lot of the trolling that people are doing in general is more so for suspended fish, right? So if you're uncertain based on bait, if you do a scan, you do your 3-point check, you know, shallow, mid, and deep for your bait fish. And especially like, dude, you're seeing a weekender, right? And you're fishing vermilion. He just said vermilion, right?
You're right.
He did. It's not a spot burn. That's freaking giant lake. Wherever you're launching on vermilion, you better get down your 3-point check. What is the 3-point check for those who don't know? You're going to find an area where you check for bait, shallow, mid, and deep every single time you go there. And you're going to do your research and homework until you find consistent areas. I talk about in the book again, something I do every single day. It tells me so much. Okay, is bait shallow, mid, or deep? It gives you a starting point, right? Unless I've got mid-depth bait, unless I've got suspended, you know, Ciscos or suspended perch or whatever the forage base is you're looking at or walleyes, I'm not going to go out here and try to coax a muskie out of 20 feet to come off the bottom and hit my headlock that's running 8. I'm not really interested in making him move 12 feet, right? Angling, the decision to be made between casting, trolling, and jigging is a matter of efficiency. What is the most efficient methodology to get as close to a muskie as humanly possible? Right? When things are completely scattered, right? You're going to have to just go, well, the majority of them are on the bottom. I don't want to admit it, and it sucks, but it's true. All right. If you follow the tenets of structure fishing, where do muskies retreat to when things are not prime? They retreat to the first break or the main basin. That is what they do, whether you believe it or not. So you just have to commit to it and go, well, you know what? It might be fun. Everybody else is throwing bucktails at the weed beds. But if everybody else isn't catching fish, or, you know, Lonnie Thompson caught a 32-incher after 4 days, yeah, that's not efficiency. You know, you see these tournaments, Jay, it cracks me up, right? 40 boats went out, 40 boats in this tournament, and 4 fish were caught. So 80 people at, you know, 16 hours, right? So my phone's hemmed up here.
Yeah, that happens.
It's 16 times.
It honestly does.
So you're sitting here looking at this thing, right? And you're looking at production. And so, let's see, 80
or or 120 boats in this tournament went out, and 16 were boated for the day.
Okay, so let's what do you say? 120 boats times 8, right? 120 boats times 2 people in a boat, which is 240, times 8 is 1,920 freaking hours of angling. Say it with me. 1,920 freaking hours of doing the same shit. This is why I soapbox. Are you ready? This is why I rub people so freaking wrong in this game so often. You're telling me that's okay? It's a fish. It's not in the woods. It didn't crawl out of the lake. It is there out of a body of water in on any given day, I am totally of the belief that somewhere in 5 to 10% of muskies are active per given day, right? And you're saying 1,920 hours of angling for that kind of yield. That is just mind-boggling awful. It just is. It just simply is. It just doesn't compute in my brain. Where I'm going, okay, that's ridiculous. And I think a lot of people lose sight of that, of like, I think the grind, like the grind of musky fishing, excuses that, right?
The fish of 10,000 casts.
I haven't had a guide trip. Dude, the last guide trip I had that lasted more than 6 hours, I can't remember. Sorry if you're ever going to come fishing with me. You got to know what they're doing, where they're at, and what the most effective methodology is. You've got to throw away what you want to do. What I want to do does not matter. If you bought a Kraken yesterday and you're super freaking excited about it, and the pattern doesn't call for a Kraken, guess what you're going to catch? Diddly dick. Right? You just bought a Titan. I'm talking about my bait, so I can really talk some shit here. You just bought a Titan. I've heard about the Titan for so long, and Steve says it's great. If you misapply that tool, guess what you're going to get out of it? Nothing. Not shit. Right? You know the old adage, don't bring a knife to a gunfight? Think about angling in that way. What is the most effective tool? What is the most effective methodology? A question I get all the time, and I get it. Everybody's at a different experience level. You know, do you like trolling? Or do you like to troll, or do you troll? I like catching fish. I don't care how we do it as long as it's effective, right? Now, backing up to note my own hypocrisy from just a few moments ago. I'm not going to go drive around and sharpshoot all the freaking time, right? Talk of the panoptics thing. Because it can be done, but for me, trolling, casting, and jigging is enough. Where if I can't catch them casting, trolling, and jigging, but what is the vast majority of angling time is spent casting. The vast majority. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But if the yield is, you know, I go out for 3 days and you put, let's say you, a real, real enumerated variation of that would be the typical angler goes out, he puts in 6 hours for 3 days, right? He's got 18 hours in here and he's got no follows or no strikes. It's not because there was not a fish that was willing to eat. It was because his methodology did not align with what the fish were doing. I've been saying that for years in a different way, and it ruffles feathers, but it just is simply a truism, because at a certain point, especially in summer months and the early fall, there's always a constituency of muskies that are active. They may not align with what you want to do. They might not align with what you want to throw. Everybody and their brother wants to throw topwater, me included. I've said it before. Why do we not talk about bucktails all the time on the show? Because everybody else talks about freaking bucktails. That's all they do. Well, there's a bunch of guys, and the majority of anglers you're against, right? Let me put it this way. Here's some real talk, Jay. Straight talk, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You pull up to a boat ramp. There's a bunch of musky boats launching. You can pretty much discredit 90% of them if conditions are not bucktail worthy. Right off the bat, they're getting nowhere near the fish. Your tournament results scream that. Everything screams that. It's that old trope of, you know, yes, a double 10 or a double 8 has its time and place. But if the muskies are not where you want them to be, that is a wholly ineffective tool. Bringing a gun to a knife fight, bringing a knife to a gunfight, right? That's like you bringing your belt sander to a roofing job. Why? Right? Hey, boss, I got my belt sander. We're putting a roof on, Vincente. You need a nail gun.
Yeah, we don't need that today.
We don't need that today. That tool is not applicable today because we're not doing that job. If we're sanding freaking wood blanks, we need a belt sander. Leave it in the toolbox, a la your tackle box. That's what I'm saying. So, you know, if you're struggling, I'll say this. It's overarching. I'm past the dude's question. And like Minnesota, it's its own animal, dude. And circling back to him, you know, just open up yourself to all the methodologies. If it's not working, make a change. And I mean that to everybody. If it's not working, make a change. Why? Why the stubbornness? Well, I got to follow 3 days ago. Okay. That cool, bro.
Well, some people, I think a lot of people, you know, myself included at times, it's just like you don't know when to rule out that fish aren't active shallow. And there comes a point in time where this is exactly what you're getting at. It's just like it's time to make a change.
Which is? Okay.
It's like, oh, okay, the major's coming up in an hour, though. You know, the major's at 12:30 in the afternoon. Okay.
I'm not trying to talk about the book a bunch tonight, but it's like mm-hmm. that's kind of like the me putting pen to paper of like, screw it, right? And I mentioned the three-point check. See, if you told me, we went out to neighbor Steve's lake, right? Just mm-hmm. I'm mentioning this to Jay, but just imagine your typical Northwoods lake. And we go to that prime area that we love to catch muskies off of.
Mm-hmm.
And we did the three-point check on the way out there. And all the bait was deep with G-through blades. Think about that. It makes no sense.
Right.
That what you've got to do is you've got to, and this is kind of just, hippy dip. Stop telling the fish what to do and start listening to what the environment's telling you. Right? Once again, you bought a Kraken yesterday and you're excited to use it and it doesn't score, or you bought a new bucktail and doesn't score. It's not the bait, it's the application. I don't think there's, I would say of all the musky baits made right now, I would say 90% of them are great baits. There's a couple duds or some Chinese or some dog shit out there, right? But 90% have some application.
Sure.
It's all about the proper application of the tool. That's why I bring it back to, you know, I think one of the best analogies or the best analogies for musky fishing is golf when we come to like the figure eight, right? And they always say, you know, drive for hose, putt for dough, right? I don't know what that means, but drive for hose, putt for dough. Where anybody can hit a long ball, but you got to be a really good putter. And I use that on the boat about figure eights of like, there's some art to a figure eight. Well, if you're a golfer, you don't go up to the freaking tee and grab a wedge off the tee on like a par five, right? You don't. Or if you're a guitar player, don't bring your Telecaster to a freaking Pantera gig, right? Hey, it's a Pantera cover band. Should I bring my Telecaster? No. It's so obvious, right? Don't bring whatever. You know, if you're not a guitar player or a golfer, you know, don't bring your basketball to football practice.
Don't wear a Metallica t-shirt to church.
Don't wear a Metallica t-shirt. Can that just be the new name of the podcast? Don't wear a Metallica t-shirt. Jay's got that demon in him. He's got that inner Sandman's. Don't wear a Metallica t-shirt to church. Oh, man. I love it. Yeah, I mean, it's just misapplication. So, how do we get to that point? It's checking bait fish. If you must, if you absolutely have to have it beaten through your head because you're a Cro-Magnon and you go bait fish are deep on spot, like my prime spot, or spot area or leading into a spot. I hate the word spot, but let's just go with it. Check your other prime spots and go, all the bait fish are deep outside all three of my prime areas. It's a flashing sign that says, well, fish deep.
Oh, it tells you a lot. Yeah, right, absolutely.
Fish deep today, asshole. Well, I'm going to put on my top water and nothing's going to happen. You know?
Maybe we'll get one to hit.
Maybe we'll get one to hit.
Right.
You bought the t-shirt off Amazon of one just blasting a walleye and you go, the muskies are crazy. They're not. They're lazy. Don't argue with everything that you see. Don't let hope overcome reason. Right? Just be like the whole folks last podcast. That's the only one we needed, Jay. Don't let your hope overcome reason.
Figure it out yourself. Write that down. Hold on.
So, yes, I want the freaking bone crushing top raider strike. As we all do. But in general, it's not going to happen. So you've got to dial in on what is reality, not what you're trying to manifest. Right? Blades. I've heard they're kicking on blades. If I'm a weekender, dude, I'm coming in like sight unseen going, all right, what's going on right now? What's happening at this very moment? Things are screwed up. And that's it, you know, outside of like, I don't want to say severe cold fronts, dude. If you try hard enough, you can catch a muskie in a cold front. Sorry.
Oh yeah.
Done it. Been there. Jay's watched it a billion times, right? You'll find one. And it's not that there's just one in the whole lake. It's just a microcosm, right? So it is the culmination of paying attention to bait fish, paying attention to small changes and saturation casting. And the reason you make that decision is based on like really strong cues, you know, that tell you structure what it is. You know, there's no like, I love this because I'm just cutting through the shit because I'm tired. I'm pretty successful in the water. I do not have musky divining rods, Jay. Right, remember those old in the back in the day, they grab their divining rod and some crazy person will walk around and say there's water over here, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Oh, they're in a trance or whatever, they're possessed because they wore their Metallica shirt to school or church.
That's probably the reason.
Right, that's it. The metal is the devil, everybody's what I'm getting at. Anyway, I don't have some musky divining rod that says muskies are over here, and I know I'm taking not even context clues. I'm looking at what is happening. I'm making an analyzation of what is happening and going, what baits run closest to what's happening now? There's my secret, everybody. What are my electronics telling me? Where is the majority of bait fish, and what baits do I have that get where they are? Slightly above. Not by much.
There it is.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. You too can have a podcast with a host as lame as Jay. Teasing. But that, I'm teasing you. I love Jay. But that would really cut to the core of it for me of like, it's not rocket genius shit. It just isn't. It's not like, you know, like I said, the divining rods are this, that, and the other. It is like minute by minute by, oh, that's a freaking great song. Minute by minute. Keep it holding. If you don't like Mike Went Dawn, you can get off my podcast.
Oh, okay.
Is that a tough swallow? Do you like Michael McDonald?
Ugh. Really? No.
I don't either.
Not a big fan.
Anyway, sorry, it's a long one.
Yeah,
it's literally taking the information given to you and applying baits to it. I'll shut up, man. I'm too tangential. I am just like off the rails on the musky gravy train. Fish what the lake tells you. What do you say, Jay?
That's it.
That's it.
You know, said it earlier. It's just like, where's the majority of the debate? Oh, okay. You know, I'm seeing a lot right here. Okay, what do I have that runs just above them?
Yeah,
and that's our game plan. Let's try that game plan for a couple hours.
I'll tell you the magic trick, everybody. Are you prepared? You ready for this, Jay?
Yeah.
All you have to do is spend a little time paying attention to all the information you have and stop casting for like 12 minutes.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, it doesn't always work. Is it every day? Is it like perfect? No. But if you go, oh, crap.
Like I've always said, you know, it's like if you fish the same lake 2-3 days in a row, you're going to learn a lot by spending that 12 minutes and exploring when you get out there approximately the same time every day, let's say, for example.
Or not. It's an ebb and flow. It always is. And we didn't even cover all the questions this week. I'm just ranting. I'm sorry. But the information is there, right? The information is there. The data is there, right? I'm not seeing any bait. Move. Find it. Stop casting. Save yourself so much time by stop being hard-headed. You can go with the flow of things. If you're not seeing bait fish, you're not, in most circumstances, guess what? You're not going to catch muskies. Right?
Yeah.
If you can't find them anywhere, guess what? They're buried up super shallow in the shit. Get in there. It's the dogma of muskie fishing drives me nuts. There's like this modicum of, like, it's supposed to be admirable to just grind your brains out for one bite for 4 days.
Yeah, there you go.
That's 4 days. The hunt was on. It was day 3 for the beast. Right?
Yeah.
No. Stupid. You know, I would be unemployed. You can't look at it that way where that's acceptable. I'm not saying you have to go out and catch fish every day. I don't catch a fish every time I launch the boat. Doesn't happen. Shit happens. Most days I do. And the only thing I'm doing differently is like, I'm just going, what's reality versus what I want to happen? My clients, if I asked every client, like, you want to fish topwater? Everyone would go, oh, hell yeah.
Right.
Everyone. It could be snowing. Yeah, hell yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Stop putting, like, inflicting your will on the muskies. Right? You got a new bait, you want to use it. The muskies don't care. You want to fish fast, but they want it slow? Muskies don't care. What is it going to take to close the distance? What's it going to take to close the gap is what matters. What methodology you choose to use is a matter of efficiency. Trolling, casting, jigging. That's it. Jaybird.
Tonight's theme, don't let hope overcome reason.
Minute by minute, keep holding on.